Nice. Let me just go live here. Perfect. Give me a sec, everybody. I think I'll just get my ducks in a row. Let's invite Ava into the green room. Invited and coming on. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air with episode 54. Episode 54, I think it is been, well, it's been an amazing year so far, has it not? I just wanted to do a quick couple of things when we do a bit of housekeeping, I guess, when we start this show. Basically, we need to understand whether we are on air in every channel that we want to be. So everyone on LinkedIn, hello. can you please just say hello? Eva, but you're here. How are you doing? I can hear you, Eva. Can you hear me? No, I don't think I can. Let me just mute Eva for a sec. Okay, everyone on LinkedIn, just say hello. Let me know whether you're there. Let me know if I can hear you. I'll see you and you can see me. That would be very good to see. On Facebook, please do let me know. Again, just comment on the stream if you see it. Let me know if that's okay. And I think even on Periscope, we're here now. So fantastic to see everyone there. Please do say hello. Okay, I think we're all here, which seems pretty good. Eva is here also. Can you hear me okay, Eva? I don't think you can for some reason. Okay, Eva, let me know when whether you can get your earphones working, and then we can figure out where we go. I suspect you are reading but not hearing what I'm saying, but never mind. Let's get on with the show. Effectively, we are going to be talking about how to hire on hackathons. Give me one sec, actually. Let me see if I can bring Gaurang on, actually. He's also going to be a guest for us, and he might be a person that can help us with this moment. Give me one second. If I can find the guy, that would be amazing. No, that's not there for some reason. Okay. Sorry for this, guys. Let me just see if I can get the right people in the show. I'm going to go for, let's have a look, see if Ivan is here. Okay, cool. Let's get Ivan on. Great. All right. Eva, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm afraid there were some technical problems there, but good thing about this show is that you can always bring on additional guests. And here we are with Ivan Kolenko. Ivan, how are you doing, sir? Long time no see, man.
Indeed. All good, all good. Happy, super thrilled and happy to see you.
No, I'm very thrilled to see you, and you're looking very well. It must be a year or two since we've last actually had a chat. So great to see you, man.
Likewise.
How is recruiting in Switzerland for you?
Yeah, it's like a very interesting market still. Things are happening. There's like much more than much more out there than it was 2016, where when we met 2017 also. So in the last 2-3-4 years, there's like many more recruitment startups, agencies, individuals appearing that actually want to play the game, be involved in tech recruitment. So that's really cool to see, actually. So yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And just for people who don't know, Ivan, basically, just introduce yourself. You're one of these like tech recruiters that used to work in engineering also, and you're doing your own business now. Is that right?
Yeah. So yes, I started actually with like a very traditional IT background. So I really studied bachelor's and master's computer science. And at that moment, I was like, nah, programming is not for me. But at the very end of the master's, I was like, maybe it is actually for me. And so the first job I took was actually a very traditional software engineering job, Python, JavaScript, coding I've been coding then for 3 years, really full time. And at the same time, I was thinking, okay, what can I do on my own, which is exciting and really can help the local tech community. And it turned out to be tech recruitment. So I was like inspired by other people who did it, who knew the industry from a software engineering perspective, and then could really connect companies and candidates in a really high touch personalized way. And this is what I still do since last 2-3 years full time. But you know, I started actually moonlighting, so I started doing this on the side while still having a full time job. So I was moonlighting for 2 years, I think, almost, and then now since 2 years I do it full time. At the same time, I do consulting gigs, both for candidates and actually companies. I put an ebook out there on Gumroad, Coder Fit, all you need to know for your programming career, essentially. Mm-hmm. We just launched it on Friday. So I try to do everything related to a good programming career and what needs to be done in this sector. And yeah, I'm really focused on Switzerland and Zurich. But I love to connect with people from London or Berlin or all over the world.
Well, yeah, and actually one of the good things about hackathons is exactly this, your ability to interact with lots of people from different places. I think that's always been one of the charming things about hackathons, back when it was a software engineer only type of activity before recruiters kind of like stole the concept and what have you. But yeah, a very interesting career path for someone who's come from a technical background and into tech recruiting, which is why I think you'd be particularly suitable to have this conversation with us, actually. Because hiring via hackathon was something that was almost becoming cool, like something that was cool to do for companies that had the capacity, but it was probably never something that was mainstream because maybe the logistics was too much, or it's too difficult to get, like people haven't worked out how do you get like enough developers in the room for there to be a hackathon, for instance. So there's a marketing problem there also. And now we've kind of moved into this scenario where, you know, the in-person hackathon possibly is not doable anymore, because we're no longer sort of in a situation where I'm sure everyone is sitting at home right now, and they're all kind of working from home. So how does this work when you are sort of doing a hackathon? And that's the theme of this this topic, really. How do you organize a hackathon when it's entirely online? Now, before we dive into it, you and I actually met in Eva's hackathon, HR hackathon, was it even 4 years ago? Was it 4 years ago now?
Yeah, it's so long time ago already. It was March, April, May 2016, one of those 3 months. I don't remember which, but it was exactly actually 4 years ago, which means time flies.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who don't know, this was a really an amazing event because I would say it was the first time that there was genuinely a HR and technologist collaboration to do a genuine hackathon. I know we see a lot of like sourcing hackathons and stuff like that, where people are like recruiters only are trying to do tasks in a speedy manner. But in this case, it was actually a bunch of HR people on one side and a lot of developers on the other, and we were actually producing software, you know, we were creating products. And it was a fantastic kind of session really a one-off. It was never repeated, sadly enough, but I was hugely enthused by it. We created some wonderful things. I believe I created the first Slack bot to do automated recruiting that should have won the damn hackathon, but I think I came second or something. But anyway, wonderful thing. Let's explore this a little bit, because what can we learn from an offline hackathon before we move to online? So when I'm hiring for a bunch of people using an in-person hackathon, what are the things I need to be aware of?
You mean hiring to get the attendees?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we had it with the 2016 hackathon, as you said, so AFA managed to get like a very healthy mix of people. I think she really did an amazing job because the atmosphere was really exactly how you need it. So basically at the intersection of two different fields that finally sit in one room for like 2 days and work on stuff together. So I think this is the thing you have to watch out to, the people that apply, to have like a healthy mix of people. And maybe for on-site it's actually you can have people that are maybe not that enthusiastic, but if they are in person, they will become enthusiastic because other people around are like helping you to be working on something or to to think an idea through. So I'm excited actually to see how it will be like in an online hackathon. Yeah, I've been in one recently, and there was one group. Yeah, there were like 7 people in this group, and then one person writes, "Oh, actually, out of 7 people, we are now only 2 because all the other 5 are ghosting us." Yeah, this would never happen in the on-site one because of the people like in the room. It's like,
So I'm. So actually, you've identified a number one difference between.
I've attended many in person and one or two, no, two online hackathons I attended. Yeah, so the challenges are really different. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the first thing with an offline hackathon, as an in-person hackathon, should we say, let's call it that. Basically, the people are going to be in the room when you start. So there's no lack of like focus or one of ghosting, right? Like there's going to be a bunch of people that say, yes, we're going to be here. And then they're not. That happens online all the time. And that could be for good or bad reasons. Like in our situation right now, actually, Eva was meant to be coming on at the beginning. We're going to try and bring her back a bit later. But there was a technical problem which prevented that from happening. And it means we had to rejig it a little bit. Now, on an offline situation, that wouldn't happen because everyone would already be in a room. So I would say the synchronicity of being in the same room and the same time, same place means that it's probably easier to organize, especially in that chaotic start of a hackathon. So for the people who don't sort of aren't aware, but a traditional hackathon generally is not particularly planned at the beginning, but it's about getting a bunch of people together in a room and then kind of throwing it out there to say, how do we divide ourselves into teams? How do we work on different projects? And it's in that sort of chaotic meeting together, similar to, you know, everyone being in the same room in a party or a networking event or something like that, that you would end up identifying people you want to work with. I remember, for instance, in the HR hackathon that Eva ran in person, 2016, there was literally a case where people had to divide themselves between people who had the idea and then people who were prepared to work on those ideas. And that was the big division between the two groups. And the people with ideas had to get up and pitch their idea and then walk around basically soliciting support for their idea. And you had to play one of the two roles. Like as a participant of the hackathon, you're either the person with the idea or you're the person that was able to contribute or wanted to contribute to the another person's idea in some way. And how you would match those people is literally through, you know, almost like a beauty parade. You'd have to go and just, you know, hey, I've got this idea, you and work on it. Now, for an online hackathon, we could probably replicate that, but I wonder whether, you know, that really is. I mean, you could put an online voting thing, I guess. I mean, there's a poll app right now, for instance, in this software. Potentially, you could set up a list of things to say, you could collect the ideas in advance and then punch it out and say, hey, listen, vote on these. And the people who vote on them might then say, be allocated to work on those tasks. I don't know. But it's one ideation and how you do, if you like, allocation of resources in a hackathon. That's a key difference, I think, between online and offline. What else would you say was the difference, Ivan, having sort of been to both of these types of things?
It's in a way, like, let's say in an on-site setting, it's more, it does have also, like, it has both, like, the pluses, you are more focused, but the minuses, you really cannot relax. And this, like, can then, the quality can suffer of the product quite a lot. So I could imagine that an online hackathon, because you can actually, quickly take a nap, or really, if you're really tired, to immediately just say, okay, I'm gone for like half an hour, and then take a power nap. You cannot do it really on an on-site hackathon. So I could imagine actually the code quality should be better on an online one, because you can like work more productively, because you can take breaks and so on, and you don't have like around you like a million energy drinks, which also, I mean, they're also detrimental. They're not only good for you.
Yeah, false friend for sure. But I tell you, the code quality is one aspect, but really the other aspect is this sense of, can I trust the person working? Because the energy of the hackathon is when, you know, you have a team, then you're all working together and you're just burning time. You're feeding off each other because, you know, you can see everyone working hard in their particular part. And I think that might be quite difficult to replicate on an all hackathon, because if the dude does take a nap, What does that mean? You know, you're going to feel a little bit, hey, why am I doing all the work? And Ivan there is like, he's seemingly missing an action for 3 hours, you know, how getting some sun. So I think that for an effective online hackathon, and by the way, we're talking it in a group setting, this has to have visibility of team at the same time. Maybe this is like a Zoom room or something, or, you know, where a group can actually collect together in a digital space at the same time, but no one's like checking out. Because when you do check out, then that will basically really be a demotivating factor for everyone else, I think.
I think you need much more communication skills. So basically, you really, this might be really something that developers that take part in this, they will need to learn this if they're not used to working in a remote environment. So it could be like really something to like try out remote work in a fun setting. Because this will be challenging because, in a Zoom room, it's still not exactly the same as you say. So you cannot really track, okay, who's really slacking off and who's like, it could look that I'm slacking off, but maybe like I'm fixing like the front end, like really for 2 hours or something like that, right? So it's this always like this with coding, because some things that take like, look like they took 2 minutes, they took actually 2 hours.
My developer friends tell me this all the time, because as a non-developer, you assume work is like typing into a keyboard. Like, why aren't you typing into a keyboard? But actually, it is like him staring out the window might actually be work, because he's thinking about the problem. And, you know, he's trying to fix this issue. And how do you measure what is, in effect, problem solving? Problem solving is very hard to measure the effort. Because the only thing we can measure is the output, whether the problem is solved or not. But the fact that the problem isn't solved doesn't mean work hasn't been expended to actually get to a failed situation. So it's really hard to monitor that. But I would say there is always that suspicion when it is remote and distributed. And maybe that takes a little bit of the energy out of a group style online hackathon. But I mean, I just see Mark actually on the chat stream. Mark's actually very famously, I'm similar to you actually, ex-engineer into recruiter. So what a strange kind of, there's more than one of you out there who've moved from like engineering and technical work into recruiting. But I think you guys have a unique insight on this, because you can understand the psychology and also the mode of working, which is very different. Recruiting work typically is very noisy. It's very phone-based. It's very, you know, energetic at times. It's kind of visible that some effort is being expended. Whereas the opposite is what you want the developer to behave like. You know, typically it's high focused, solo, you know, zoning into this, and not so obvious what people be doing. In any case, you're about to say something, Ivan?
It's actually like, it's not all development work is like this. Actually, most development, like, or a lot of development work is actually also, you have Stack Overflow open, then you have a code thing that you're changing, but at the same time, this code thing changes like the database, the front end, or something else. So basically, you have also like 1 million things in your head. What is true is that like, it's all like the moving parts are like more technical, let's say, and in recruitment, it's basically people. They have a lot of people that you have to think of. But in coding, actually, it's like writing. So basically, if you ever wrote like a really, really, really long text, this is like coding. So basically, you write like a new chapter, but you have to like think, okay, how does this reference to like a thing I wrote like a week ago? So coding is actually also can be very like multitasking-ish in many cases. So actually, there are similarities, but of course, you have to experience both to really understand, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I see Eva actually saying maybe she can come back on, so let me try and invite her on. But before I do that, I'm going to ask you sort of kind of a final overview question. If you were to organize an online hackathon for recruiting purposes, which is what most people in this show who are watching it are thinking about. Hey, listen, we were going to do an in-person hackathon to recruit developers, but now we can't do that because of COVID-19. Is it possible to do it online? How would you set it up? Like, what are the things that you would construct to make that happen, Ivan?
So it is definitely possible. You have to give people a purpose. In this case, it's like HR tech and the virus. Basically, that's a big purpose. People want to like work on cool things that bring the things that bring the world forward. So you have to have one aspect is like this motivation. You have to really, okay, why should I go into the Slack channel and be there for the weekends instead of like doing other things? And the second aspect to have it to be such a it is a success is really to like take care of the people, look what they write, what they post, and watch their communication style. And if you want to recruit, I mean, then you will see like the ones that communicate best, they probably are not too bad people to keep the conversation going with.
So, okay, two big options there, which I think are at the start of the idea and the end of it. So the first is you need to have a motivation to do it. And people often forget about that. They think, oh, we're doing a hackathon. We're going to hire a bunch of people. Come and do the hackathon. Actually, to do a hackathon properly, you're asking people to spend time, often free time. And why would they do that? There's no incentive. You might offer one prize, but hey, lots of people don't win the prize. There's a high risk that the effort that you expend is not going to be compensated for. So you need to have a motivation. As I say, you don't want to jump onto the bandwagon, but perhaps you can kind of build something interesting and useful for the people there. I mean, for instance, one of the things that I've seen that's relevant for recruiting is actually there's been loads of these crowdsourced spreadsheets going around. About recruiters who are available now. Let's put it onto a Google Sheet. Startups still hiring. Let's put that into a Google Sheet. That type of stuff. Definitely a developer could get that data and they can make something out of it that's a little bit better than the spreadsheet. And that may be a doable project. It's one of those things that may be in alignment with the need for people to pull together at this time, but also, give you the opportunity to assess these people. And at the second point you mentioned, you can observe and even track, if you like, people's communication style. That's one of the ways in which you could understand and assess the quality of the developer. It's not just the production of the code. And I think that's also an interesting factor, because what is code quality? This is not necessarily as clear cut as people might imagine. Because oftentimes it's about functional code that needs to work now. And in a hackathon scenario, that's exactly what you want. You don't want something that basically is half finished that would generally take 5 weeks to do in any case, and then someone's offer up as a perfect piece of code. Actually, no, the task is to get it done in 24 hours. So that's going to look like ugly stuff. So this is another thing that we need to get right in this regard. In any case, that's really good to know. Let me sort of see if I can bring Eva on right now. We'll try and bring Eva Zills back on the show, and hopefully we'll be able to connect. I think we saw her perfectly on screen, actually, and even heard her. But for some reason, she couldn't see us or hear us. So I wonder whether we've managed to fix that problem. But again, an example that sometimes online has these additional challenges, which in person, tends not to. So we're learning it as we go. I mean, loads of people are in this position now where we're figuring out that actually, what was previously guaranteed to work is no longer as guaranteed as it was before. I'd be very interested also, eventually we're going to bring Gaurang Tovakar on because he's actually created a platform which facilitates online hackathons. And I think this may be perfect timing actually for organizations that need to hire software people but have suddenly been prevented from doing so because they had an in-person sort of way of doing it or an in-person kind of hackathon idea that obviously we can't sort of legislate for or plan for. Okay, let's bring Gaurang on actually. I think we're struggling to get Eva on. This may just be a technical issue. But we'll bring on Gaurang. I always pronounce his name poorly, so I'll have him introduce himself when he comes on. But yeah, I think there is going to be a platform solution at some point. Oh, there he is. Gaurang, can you hear us? Oh, he can't hear us.
Hi,
Gaurang, can you hear us?
Can't hear you.
Oh, well, we can hear him. How strange. Yes, Gaurang, we can hear you. I mean, I wonder whether someone can type into the chat stream and let him know that that's the case. Let me see. How do we do this? Try unplugging. Yes, we can hear you, Gara.
I can't hear you.
Can you unplug the earphones, Gara?
All is blocking it.
Yeah, we're having these terrible problems at this point. Okay, let me see. We will do this.
No, you can just ask the question in the chat now.
I don't think you can see
it. There must be some simple fix. I mean, but the thing is, you know, it will be actually becoming better. So it's good. Like, we have this problem still now, like things breaking all the time and so on. Mm-hmm. But like, look at how, compare how it was like 10 years ago. It was much worse. That nothing would exist. But that would actually allow an online hackathon, let alone remote work. But now the teams are better and will be better like every year. So it's good to get used to this experience already now.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, one of the things with AV generally, and for the folks who are listening to this, basically one of the problems is that obviously everyone has slightly different configurations. And it's quite difficult when people optimize in different ways. You could be using a browser of some type, and there'll be a feature on that browser that is incompatible with an update that Crowdcast has used, for instance. And that would cause that issue to occur.
But look, I mean, it's a question of time. I mean, now we are annoyed, but the best way to do is really just shake it off, shake the annoyance off as fast as you can, keep on going. Like you are doing, you're doing it actually quite great. I envy you. Because it will be better in 5 years. I'm sure like this problem will not be there. And then,
At some point, there'll be a universal way to do it. But the truth is, I mean, you know, you can't be devastated by these types of things. And yeah, I think one of the things that we are learning in remote working is that these things are going to be the case. Mm. And of course, if you do regular conversations, basically you're in a situation where you'll get used to a technology and used to a way of working, and it should be fine. But yeah, in other cases it's very difficult. Let's try I don't know how mobile is going to work better, but let's try it.
It does, maybe because you have on mobile, you know, all this extensions and all this crap you potentially could install, or it installs by itself because it's like malware or whatever. Generally it tends not to happen on mobile. What also is faster is the latency. So for instance, on an iPhone, it's still the latency, like camera audio to talking to someone is less than with a MacBook, because basically it's you can say less complex, although it's also like a computer. A smartphone is definitely a computer. It's still like kind of, you have less possibilities on it, but that means also less like bad things can go onto it.
Yeah. Hey. Oh, there's Eva.
I just said it.
Hey. Wow. There you go. Okay. Wow. I'm on my mobile phone, so yeah.
Great to see you, Eva. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Great. We actually saw you and heard you very clearly.
Oh, God. What did I say?
I know. You weren't saying anything terrible. Don't worry. But I did try to message you to the effect that, hey, Eva, we can hear you. But thankfully, you were very polite in your natural way. So we had no problems with that. Anyway, Eva, for the people who don't know you, I wonder whether you could just introduce yourself to the crew here, to the people who are watching, who you are, what do you do?
Yeah, so, well, my name is Eva, and I'm an HR blogger since 2007, so that's going to be 13 years this year. I've also been consulting companies in their recruitment efforts, working for a job posting agencies who worked internationally. And then I started having the idea of the HR hackathon, because I thought it would be great to have both developers and HR people working together on software solutions built for HR, and also to have them work together, communicate with each other, because usually people say you can't put recruiters and developers into the same room. It just wouldn't work communication wise. And I thought it would be a very good experiment to try this out. And yeah, it worked. It worked well.
Yeah, it was an amazing event, actually. And I think I remember I was attracted to it initially because of that concept, because there was an antipathy between HR, or should we say recruitment people, and technical people. You know, it was at that stage where people were feeling, you know, very hostile to each other, like two hostile camps, so to speak. And that event at the time, you know, gave me a really good sense that maybe there's another way in which we could interact and work together. And it turned out that we were able to work very well indeed. So that was fantastic. So Eva, can you tell us a little bit about where we've progressed on that? Because the hackathon has moved online, hasn't it? Yes. What's the plan for you there?
Well, thanks to COVID-19, I have to say. So I had to cancel the event I had usually planned for the end of June in Berlin, because no one really knows what's going to happen virus-wise. No one knows if any other event will be possible this year. And I wanted to move it online I've been thinking about it from March, I think, beginning of March. And then I saw at the end of March, there was this huge hackathon from the German government. It was the idea from German government, and there were seven companies from Berlin who in 1 week, it's only in 7 days, they put out the word that it would be a hackathon for all the Germans or everyone who wanted to join. And there were in the end, there were 43,000 people who had signed for this hackathon. And it was huge. They crashed the whole service. Slack was completely broken down. They took hours to get that sorted out. And they had 1,500 different projects during this weekend. And I looked at what they were doing, what kind of tools they were using, and I thought, yeah, well, this is possible. This is possible to get the HR hackathon online as well, because it's everyone is working from their computers anyway. Most of the interaction, of course, if you can have someone face to face, it's a lot nicer, and you can go for a coffee, you can have a chat next to the coffee bar and that kind of stuff. But anyone is spending lots of time in front of their computers, hacking away, working on different projects, and this is also possible online only. And I thought, well, it would be a good idea to test it out. Like I did with the in-person hackathon. I'm like, okay, why not put it online and see if people are interested. And now we have about 120 people signed up for it, and it's going to be next week. So I think it's a good proof of concept.
That's amazing. Please feel free to share the link to that in the chat stream, sure. Eva. I think people might be interested to figure out a little bit more and dive into this. And you know what, these types of, it goes back to your point about motivation, Ivan, because, you know, when you have like a big sort of bat signal, so to speak, you get responses. I think the Estonians also had something like this, didn't they? Where they had a hackathon, and it was like a huge number. I mean, Estonia, a very small population of people, but there was tens of thousands of people on this thing. So it's definitely, you know, when you have a situation, I don't think it needs to be necessarily related to disaster, but some sort of circumstance where you can say, hey, listen, what social good, what community plus thing can we do? That will actually motivate people to donate time. And, you know, as a recruiter, you might still have the angle to observe, you know, which people might be people that you want to work with in future. At the very least, you'll be able to interact with people that you hadn't previously been able to deal with. That they'll be bouncing, you'd be bouncing emails off them, basically. But here you've got a different conversation to have with them. Tell me a bit more about the HR hackathon before we try and bring Gorang back on, Eva. What is the concept? How does it work? What kind of ideas are going on? That kind of thing.
How does it work? Well, it's more email communication, Slack communication, putting out very strict rules, or at least very precise rules on how things should move forward. So, for example, on Monday, next Monday, I will open the project idea phase, which is usually during the HR hackathon. It's in the beginning of the first 30 minutes. So I'll leave a little bit more time to get everyone their ideas out on paper. And then I make a list. And when I kick off next Friday next week, people can have a look at the different projects, find their teams, build the teams and work on these projects. So it's a different setup, a lot of more thinking. Well, in processes and how do I streamline everyone to the same channels that they communicate with each other. And it's a lot of writing, email communication, but this is, I think, only reflecting what most people who have to work from home right now experience as well. So you have to put a lot of more things in writing than before. So it's, yeah.
That's actually a key point of remote work generally. It's like the value of voice and synchronicity shifts to from verbal right now to written and whenever. I find that instant messages far superior to most things generally. So I can imagine people quickly sticking up sort of WhatsApp groups or Slack channels or whatever to have a chat with each other, depending on that. Although probably the choice of communication channel is maybe the first thing they need to talk about. When you're working in a team setting, one of the first things to do before you even think about the project is, how do we communicate? How do we communicate? What tools do we use? How do we resolve disputes? All those types of things. Eva, can you share the hackathon link in the chat stream?
Yes, I just have to to find out how I can do this on my mobile phone because I don't have it.
Of course, your mobile. Share it out to me. I'll find it.
It's on DevPost, or you find it on, where can you find it? Someone on my Facebook profile.
I put hrhackathon.net.
Ah, exactly. You can find it. You can find it there. And there's the link when you see the register button.
I can send it. No problem.
Send it. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Cool.
Okay, I think that's there. So that's fantastic. Okay, yeah, well, everyone should check that out. I think that's certainly worth signing up to. Okay, fabulous. Let's ask you the question on recruiting, Eva, because HR Hackathon was never designed for the purpose of recruiting, but presumably there is the consequence that you might hire people as a result of working with them. And that's normal, right? So it's almost like as a positive collateral of working together is that you discover people who you might want to work with.
Exactly.
That's probably how you want to pitch it.
That's a subtle idea behind it, but it's not the purpose. So it's not.
No,
it's because not I usually say, and I always stress it. It's not a recruiting event. It's not a hiring event. It's not a software developer assessment event either. Because if I communicate it in that sense, I would scare most of the developers away, and I don't want that. And I want them to feel secure in this environment, not to be harassed by recruiters who would try to lure them away to their jobs.
And actually, that's maybe a third rule that we could talk about. Like, one of the main things is that if you have the ambition of connecting with this community and recruiting from them, you can't sort of threaten people with the prospect that they'll just be pitched all the time. Most people are sensible enough to know that, hey, if a big company is organizing a hackathon, they're doing things, of course, there's going to be people that might, there's a recruitment opportunity there. And we shouldn't deny that, hey, maybe developers may want to be looking for work. But you've got to handle that very well. You've got to handle the communication very well. You've got to police it also. So you can't have people just hustling, hey, I'm hiring for a lead software. No, you can't have that. So maybe there's a code of conduct type of thing, which is quite important to just literally say, if you sign up to this event, this is what you agree to do or not do. And if you do transgress, then organizers are going to reserve the right to remove
to
you
ban
from
you.
The from the event.
What I keep telling them, what I always tell the developers, so if there's anyone, if you feel annoyed by anyone, tell me, let me know personally, and I'll take care of it, because it's this community is very dear to me, so I really want to make sure that everyone feels safe and that really the working together is in the foreground and everything else. If it happens, very nice byproduct, I can only appreciate it, and I'm very happy for all parties involved. But it's not the bigger purpose or the purpose of the event in itself.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it's almost like you need to have that in your mind all the time.
All the time.
I mean, recruiting is something that will happen almost as a natural outcome of working together and knowing people in the same way friendships might happen as a natural outcome. I mean, we've become friends as a result of meeting at this hackathon, right? It was never my intention to go to the hackathon and meet friends. But that happened because, you know, we were there. And in a similar way, I think to organize this online hackathon, you have a similar approach. It's like, yes, you might have a sense that you're going to recruit from it, or you'll at least build relationships with people that could be collaborators in future, let's say. But if that's your only objective, then you're going to have a struggle. So we have Gaurang here. Gaurang, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can now.
Amazing. Great to see you, man. Yeah. I saw you had these technical difficulties before, but for people who don't know you, can you just quickly introduce yourself to the audience there, Gaurang?
Sure. Hi, guys. I'm Gaurang. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Indoors. We are a coding assessment platform. We started the company back in Singapore, and last year, we are expanding into the UK as well. So I'm based in London now. So, you know, based on the engine of coding assessments, we have two main services. One is online hackathons, conducting online hackathons, and second is upskilling. So today we are here to talk more about online hackathons.
This is what I want to talk to you about, Gaurang, because, you know, we've been talking about this concept really from an offline basis. So all of us have got experience of participating in hackathons in a small way. We've also recruited people from those events. Yeah. But the online hackathon, I think, is a very new thing. You guys started building it, I think, a year or two ago. So kind of predated maybe. We're very early to take in this opportunity. But obviously in the COVID world, post-COVID world, you know, this becomes suddenly much more relevant because hiring via in-person hackathon may be very difficult. So can you explain to us how the online hackathon works sort of in the Indoors platform, Gaurang?
Sure. So I'm going to send a couple of links in the chat, actually. So I'll give you two examples. One is an online hackathon that we did for Dell. And second is the hackathon we did for Rolls-Royce, actually. So earlier when you were talking to Ivan, I think the way we are approaching it should be, you know, we shouldn't just take what is happening offline or on-site and try to replicate it online, right? So when we are doing an online hackathon, we need to think from first principles. That's what we did, right? So we didn't limit the online hackathon to only 24 or 48 hours, you know? So the online hackathon usually has to have a lot more flexibility, as Ivan was saying, because, you know, you can go out, take a nap, sleep. In a physical hackathon, you don't really sleep. You're staying awake on Red Bulls and coffee. You can't really do that for online hackathons. So usually when we do online hackathons, we give them a lot more time. We give them about 1 week or 2 weeks even to actually submit a real working piece of code. And, you know, in an online hackathon, it's not just about coming together and hacking a piece of code. It's really kind of replicating a remote working model. Or, you know, when you actually contribute to open source code or something, it's quite similar to that, right? So all of you are actually working on a similar problem, and you're trying to solve that problem at your own pace. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can always see how much every person has contributed, because you can look at their Git commits and you can look at every line of code that they have written. And I think that's the beauty of online hackathon. That's what we have done.
So I've got the concept now. So a couple of key points for people who are thinking about doing an online hackathon, whether it's on with your platform or not. Number one, the time constraints. You can't just replicate an in-person hackathon and think that's going to work, because the time constraints aren't there. People are going to have live. We're all figuring out actually our lives are very much now meshed into our working day. You know, previously we could box that off and just get on with it. But no, now, you know, dogs are going to walk on screen. Things are going to happen. So we need to cater for that, and we need to understand, you know what, we need to kick the 24, 48 hour typical super hard sprint type of structure of a hackathon and kick that into a week or more so that people can actually spend time to it and come back to it more and more. Second thing is that it's actually meant to replicate what remote working is like, which is in fact, again, similar to what a hackathon is meant to do. You know, it's meant to be not forcing someone through a structure that you have created, but allowing them to use their own tools, allowing them to use their own sort of way of working, and just solving the same problem. So you have a single problem that people might apply to do, and they kind of work against it. And through that, you'll be able to get submissions that well, you can assess and validate from that.
Exactly. I'll also give you one more anecdote from the Dell hackathon, actually. So in the Dell hackathon, you know, every online hackathon that we have done has a few phases, right? In the step zero, I would say, we actually sit down with the company. We try to understand their problems and the themes that they want the hackathon to have. In case of Dell, it was about remote working and all those things. And in the second phase, we need to do a lot of marketing for the hackathon to get a lot of participants in it, right? So while doing the marketing, we had a unique insight, actually. So when in the beginning, when we were saying that, hey, you might be able to get a job at Dell, we had a few people coming in, definitely. But then when we started saying that, hey, you might get a Dell XPS laptop, that at that time, we got a lot more surge in the participants. It's quite unique, you know, in certain cases.
So yeah. What are you saying there, Gaurang? You're saying basically you can offer something as a physical, as a tangible return to their participation. Yeah. You might then get that pop. I tell you what, that makes sense, actually, because when you're saying, oh, you might get a job, you're kind of talking only to people that really want a job, you know, like they're highly motivated job seekers, whereas a lot of people that we end up hiring don't necessarily have that mindset at the beginning. You know, they're like, sure, I'll check it out, but they're not necessarily like hyper motivated. Yeah. But once they get involved in a hackathon with the prospect of potentially winning a prize, then maybe they get something from that. Ivan, you look very thoughtful, man. You got anything to add?
No, I mean, it's like really, as you say, like this, like, you know, you do something in the virtual world, but then in the end, you get something physical.
Okay, listen, I'm going to go to the questions because we've got some really interesting questions asked by the audience here. So firstly, the question from Siobhan, what is the next step? Let me see. What is the next step after spotting tech talent via a hackathon? How do you assess the attributes of each candidate? Now, I'm assuming that, let's say we're on an online hackathon, so we already have at least a submission, right? But what else do we need to look for on this? Gaurang, let's kick off with you. Like, how does the assessment side work?
So we have done it in a couple of ways. In the first hackathon that we did, sometimes we actually ask them only for their code. Sometimes we also ask them for a small deck, which demonstrates their soft skills as well, and also their designing capabilities and the thinking process as well. And then after that, they usually have a physical interview with them or a Zoom call nowadays. So there are two or three steps there again, similar to a normal interview. But you know, when you get to the actual Zoom call or the actual interview, you know that this person can actually code or they can actually perform in a remote working environment or any kind of environment. So these are the two steps usually, or three steps.
Yeah. Really interesting. I think the online side makes it more clear because, yes, this person has produced it. And presumably, you could track their comments and their commits over time as well. So you can validate a lot. But going back to complete that answer, Siobhan, I point you to what Ivan said earlier. In a kind of an online or an offline type environment, you can observe their interaction. Like, how do they talk to each other? How do they kind of interact with other people? Most modern code is developed with in collaboration with others, often with others of varying technical capability, for instance. A person who you might want to work with could be someone who would exhibit behaviors that are compatible with that. Okay, next question. This is from, I believe the name is Aza. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. How do you validate the needs assessment for a hackathon within an organization? What is the best process for that? Who is accountable and what are the ideal sponsors? So I guess what Aza is saying is, how do you know a hackathon is suitable for this organization?
Yeah, there are a couple of ways of looking at it. One is sometimes the companies, they actually, when we start talking to them, and when we present this idea to them, they actually quite like it because it's a new way of doing things. So in London as well, we are talking with a couple of companies which really like this idea. That's just organic thing, I would say. And the second thing is, if you want to hire it at a very massive level, if you want to hire, like, you know, I think online hackathon is a very good way of doing it. In terms of ideal sponsors, I would say the brand is very important, because if you don't have a good brand behind the hackathon, it's very difficult to drive participation for it. That's very important, I think. Yeah.
Yep, excellent stuff. Eva, have you got any sort of contributions to that, like needs analysis? You know, what kind of organization would benefit from an online hackathon?
Well, I think as you said, Gorang, the brand is a very important matter. If you don't have a sexy brand, I think it's not really worth it. Or at least you should have some kind of idea how you can build a sexy brand, especially for this hackathon. And secondly, I think that the challenge must be very, very compelling. So really let them crack a nut. So really find something they really have to bite on, to gnaw on, to really find a solution. I think if the challenge is good, then basically it doesn't matter what kind of brand is behind it. If you can show you know your tech, you know what you want, you know what you need, I think this is the most important thing.
Okay, so we've got a couple of things there. Thanks, Eva. Gaurang mentioned it's at scale. So if you're hiring for a single developer, probably the investment of effort and anything that makes no sense, because it's a big project organized, right?
It is.
But if you're doing like persistent hiring, or you have evergreen roles, let's say you're hiring for Java engineers, you know, if you see a Java engineer, you're going to hire that person. Maybe then it suddenly shifts, and yeah, maybe it's relevant to do a big batch in one go. And then Eva, and your point, you're saying actually you also need to factor in how effective you are in marketing the proposition based on the attractiveness of your brand as a business, and or the attractiveness of the problem set that you might have. And also in this case, bear in mind, brand could mean at two levels, at the consumer level, let's say, on one side, but also at the level of the employer brand. For instance, we have a lot of technology companies that are a little bit sort of unknown to the consumer at large, but they may be very attractive to software engineers because of the function they perform. Elasticsearch, for instance, Mark Duvall in the chat stream there works for them. They could easily do a hackathon. I think they do very well. Okay, same question to you, Ivan. How do you validate? You're a recruiter. You probably consulted companies on this. Like, when would you say, hey, listen, this is a good idea to do a hackathon or something similar?
Yeah, so like if you have like a interesting problem to solve, maybe. So because like brand is very hard. Like if you don't have it, like whew, good luck getting it, right? Within like next week. but an interesting problem, I mean, you can really, let's say, come up with something, or maybe you really have something in your organization that is like problematic and very challenging, and you want to like include more people. And in this case, you could do such a thing, and then you would have access to the whole world of people to work on this and collaborate. So this would be one of the things I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's definitely elements that we could look at in this. It's not for everybody, but if you are hiring at scale and you want to give yourself a big boost, this may be a good option, particularly actually if you want to build a reputation in the community you care about, so you have a longer term strategy to recruit people, this would be a good approach. And you know, you need to also have a legit problem. Now this could be within your business. You know, it could be something that you have an internal thing that you want to sort out, or there's something you do as a company that impacts the wider world in some way. And that could also be used as a theme for you to build your hackathon from. Okay, very, very good. Excellent stuff. Okay, final thoughts on this before we finish the show. online hackathons, offline hackathons, what is the one thing that you would say is the big difference between the two? And what is the impact on that from a recruiter perspective trying to use either of those techniques? Gaurang, let me go with you first.
Sure. I think offline hackathons or on-site hackathons for that matter, it cannot be really used as an effective recruiting tool, I think. I don't think doing recruiting at a physical hackathon is a good thing, as Yuva was mentioning. But with online hackathon, and as you were saying earlier, the company should be clear from the get-go that this hackathon is meant for recruiting. It's not a hackathon where you're building your community. It's meant for recruiting for this company. And I think
that's very interesting.
It's a real good way of doing it.
Why just on this note, Gaurang, because I think that was kind of going countervailing to some of the conversations we had. So let me just let's have a conversation about it. Why is it better to be explicit rather than implicit on that communication?
No, because developers don't like to be toyed around. You know, if I try to sell something to a developer under the guise of something else, they usually don't like it, because I was a developer as well. Haven't coded in the last 2 years, but I didn't like when people sold me anything.
Yes, no bait and switch. It's got to be explicit. I mean, I think that is a very, very good point also. Okay, I'm going to you, Eva. What's the one thing difference between online and an offline hackathon?
Scale. it's basically what I see is when I do it in Berlin, I limit it to 100 people. It's very good for 2 days. You have in the end usually 10, 12 projects. It's not taking too much time to pitch them in front of the jury. So that's fine. And in the online hackathon, you can scale it to whatever country, to whatever companies, to different people. It can also include people who are not working in HR, freelancer, for example. So I think that's you can really get in touch with many more people than you could offline. So mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and on that side, let's say we end up in a situation where remote working becomes more of a permanent state, particularly for software engineers, then experimenting with online hackathons at this point mm-hmm. probably makes sense, because you're learning how to do it at a point where you know you're able to do it, and you're learning maybe a potentially an important technique for tech hiring going forward. Okay, Ivan, let's leave it with you. A final point, big difference between online, offline, what do recruiters need to know?
Online is more bias-free.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Mark writes it in the comments, so you need to feel people more included. It's harder online. Yeah, that's true. It's harder online, but equally in a way. So basically, you only see, because why? Because you only see like the text messages and the code. That's it, basically. Exactly. And then you only have that to judge other people. I mean, some people might even take part like with a pseudonym, right? So it's like just you can really not tell like anything about this person, just the words and the code. And so I think maybe that's one interesting aspect as well.
Yep. So also compatible with diversity, de-biasing the assessment process, and hopefully there is inclusion. I mean, I totally get Mark's point. Inclusion is more than just being like blind on things, but it's also about making people feel welcome. But being online, then you give people a variety of ways to represent themselves on there. Like, for instance, some people have put avatars on their pictures. Some people have put their real names. Some people have put their pseudonyms. The point is you permit people the choice how they want to do this. And that is, I think, the core part of inclusion. Okay, that's great, everybody. That's the end of the show. So thank you, everyone, for joining Brain Food Live on air. Great to have you. Sorry for the early kind of hiccups technically, but hey, it's a live show, these things happen, and hopefully we learn something about online hackathons as a recruiting tool. Certainly I have, and I'll be paying some attention to that going forward. I'd love to write something about it, just to do some show notes on this, so if you're interested in a copy of that, just say yes you are in the comments very quickly, and I'll make sure if there's enough people that are up for it, I'll put some time to write something down on that score. Okay, that's about it. I need to leave you with a final thing. Actually, no, I'll leave you another final thing. Two final things, actually. Firstly, GoalRine actually works for a company called Indoors. They are, of course, the sponsors of Brain Food Live ish episode 54. So please check out Indoors.io. They are an assessment tool for software people, something actually we need to really get better at in the COVID world, because you know what? The old whiteboard type style, the tech interview in person stuff, all of that is going to be receding away, whether sort of we come out of lockdown or not. So we need to investigate new ways of doing it. Indoors is definitely one of the tools that you need to check out when you do that. Second part, we are back. In fact, I am back with a ridiculous project next week, because I have decided to try and do an online marathon where I'm going to showcase organizations that have done extraordinary things to support the recruiter and HR community in the pandemic sort of world that we're in. I've been encountering loads of sort of situations where organizations and individuals have offered incredible support to people in need. And quite simply, what I'm going to do is stay online and interview those businesses and find out what the heck they're doing. So we've got loads of companies already signed up. Thankfully, I will not be doing it all by myself. So we've got amazing guests like Johnny Campbell, Lars Schmidt, Laurie Ruderman. They're all joining in as well. So feel free to sign up to that and join me next week on the 14th to 15th. Okay, that's about it, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. I will see you shortly. Have a good Easter, everyone.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.